listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Games Galore Podcast, episode number 18. It is our privilege and honor to go to Knoxville for our guest today, Tony Basilio. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony Basilio, and Basilio is B-A-S-I-L-I-O. He is a Knoxville Sports Radio titan. He runs an epic post-game show called the Garza Law Firm Fifth Quarter Reaction Post-Game Show, and my Tennessee buddies tell me it sometimes goes 5 and 6 hours into the night, way past midnight. I had the privilege of listening to a couple hours of it just via Twitter Sunday afternoon. Tony, how you doing, buddy?
Yeah, we only went about 6 and a half the other night, Brian. We're kind of working on it. Thank you for having me, man. Let me tell you, it is a real honor. As somebody who's followed your work for a long time, what a thrill, man, to get to break bread with someone of your ilk and knowledge.
Oh, right back at you, and even more so because you've got boots on the ground and a feel for the Tennessee fan base like no other. And I said last week, Tony, that if John Kelly didn't get 30 touches, it would be a long day for Tennessee. I thought if they got him 30 touches, they would hang around and be a decent game. I also said that if by chance it got lopsided, the fans would turn, and if the stands are emptying in the third quarter, and this is a 3-4 touchdown game, I said he's a goner by Sunday. You seem to have similar thoughts on your postgame show. What part I listened to it? Why does he still have a job? And talk to us on, you know, everything that's gone on since Saturday.
Brian, the Tennessee football thing is just a weird deal because you've got different subgroups. You've got a fan base that has not won a Southeastern Conference championship since they walked off the field out at the Fiesta Bowl as national champions defeating Florida State in 98. Since then, zero SEC championships. Now, granted, a couple of years they had the team at 0-1 probably should have won one defeated by LSU and a couple other opportunities to win it since then. But the truth is that the fan base is starving. But Tennessee's in a spot that a lot of schools are in because when you peel back the curtain in college football, you kind of come to the realization that college football is a rich man's activity. And what I mean by that is you've got a group of people at each school who serve as de facto owners. Now, their names aren't going to be, unlike their NFL counterparts, their names are not going to be on some website. Their names are not going to be seen in a media guide, but they operate in the shadows and they operate as the owners, and all their friends know they're the owners. And Tennessee has a group of those folks, just like every school does. And here, what it's going to come down to when this job opens, because the job's going to open, and this gets back to why this job isn't open now. This group of people has always been, Brian, and I hate to say this as an alum of the school and somebody that's been here for 30 years, but, and I come from Pennsylvania, so I maintain my Eagle fan allegiance, grew up in a Penn State family, but this is kind of the damnedest thing you'll see because these folks at times just can't get out of their own way. And so it's a difficult deal because if Alabama would have been defeated 41-0 by a coach who acted the way this guy did on Monday, and I mean the defeat coming at his hands under his auspices, and his team did not drive the ball inside the 20-yard line, he'd have been gone. And if that would have happened at Florida, and I know you have looking on your website, you're kind of a Gator guy. If that would have happened there, Florida would not put up with that. I mean, Florida, as it is, has a guy who might win 3 straight division championships, and they want to run him out of there because that's not good enough for them. Tennessee has a group of people that are in charge of this thing who are very slow, very non-progressive, very reactive, very slow in terms of their reactivity. And I don't understand why they wouldn't just get out there and be the first great job that's open. Why wouldn't you do that? But that's them. So what do I know?
And especially with the open date coming up, you know, you would think that would be the opportune time. Like I said earlier in the season, that if A&M gets clobbered by Alabama, and now this was before Antonio Callaway and Jordan Scarlett were suspended, and Florida's offense, you know, once again looked like it didn't have a pulse, which actually changed a little bit, maybe a tad, the last week or two. But I said someone would probably get axed the open date after Florida. But now, I mean, who knows? He might can beat Florida. So, all right. So, and with Butch, I mean, obviously the on-field mismanagement of games. I mean, we can talk about six or seven, you know, different ones. You know, not going for two at the Swamp 2 years ago. And then he didn't own it. You know, he said your standard 2-point chart. Why not just own it? I mean, take the heat off your players. And it's so many other things. I mean, his first couple of years when he would give all the stats of the percentages of players have never been on an airplane before, like before the game, it was like building in an excuse to lose before you've even played the game. And then he did it again this year. Before the Georgia Tech game, he's whining about Georgia Tech having an advantage. They got to practice for 2 hours in the dome. I mean, I just can't see. I can see Nick Saban hearing a player or two say that in his locker room and just going off on him. You know, what are you talking about? You know, we're going to kick their ass anyway. So, I mean, obviously there's so many things to not like about him, but how much of this is just his undoing by just pissing the fan base off with the ridiculous comments he makes?
Well, that's exactly right. And what you have with this guy is you've got a weird combination of in-game incompetence coupled with arrogance. And I don't know about you, but I've had friends who are dumber than hell and don't know it. And that is a fun combination because you can have fun with them. I mean, I'm sure you've got a buddy that can't get out of his own way, but he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And everybody's laughing at him. And that's Butch Jones.
Yeah.
That's Butch Jones. Butch Jones has no idea why this fan base here is on him. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. This is who this guy is. And
we got all day, Tony B. You don't have to make it quick, buddy. You can take as long as you want.
Well, when I found this out, I said to myself, and you know, when you do what we do, you hear things and you just kind of storm away. Because you can't use everything that you know because you want to be fair to people. And then sometimes you hear something and you go, well, hopefully that's just an anomaly. Maybe he's just having a bad day. But now it's all going to be told anyway, so why not? And you've invited me on, and I haven't said this anywhere else, but after the Oklahoma game a couple years ago, here's a guy that lets a 17-point lead slip away. And he's calling various people in his inner circle, one guy I know, and they're having a conversation, and Butch says to the guy, do you believe the way the fans are treating me and my family after this game, all the hard work I've done for these people? And can you believe this? And the guy I'm talking to says, I say to Butch, you blew a 17-point lead in your building. You had a chance to win to really take a step forward with your program. Shouldn't you be more upset over that than how people are reacting to you? But that's just kind of who this guy is. It's weird because this guy has football coaches all have a bunker mentality. We know that. And football coaches are all paranoid by nature. This guy has just been so insecure, Bri, the entire time he's been here. And it's almost like somebody tapped him on the shoulder and say, we want you to have this job. And the whole time he can't believe he has it. And he's not good enough to have it. And he knows he's not good enough to have it. That's kind of the thing I keep going back to. Because after all, wouldn't you be more upset that you blew a 17-point lead, a Saban, the guy at South Carolina? The guy at Florida, who, by the way, you guys don't like him. He's won 9 of his 10 games that are touchdown football games. That guy can coach. And this guy here just, he knows how to draw defeat from the jaws of victory. He just has a knack for it. And it's a shame because he's done a lot of good stuff in the community. He's done a lot of good stuff in the program. He's not a low rent guy. He's not a low life guy, but truly at the end of the day, I think the stage is just too big for him.
Yeah. I agree with all that. And before we get to potential candidates, because you know a lot, and well, I do want to get to that, but not quite yet. Do you think he gets canned after a blowout at Alabama, or do you think if they beat South Carolina and then, you know, can beat Kentucky, and all that is possible. And now, in fairness to him, he's a buffoon for sure, but right. He has been absolutely decimated by injuries. I mean, you know, your three projected starting linebackers are out for the year and have been for weeks now. And I mean, I know Todd Kelly's one of the top safeties in the country, and you know, you lost Chance Hall early. You lost your best Jennings, your best returning receiver. He has been decimated by injuries. So I guess my question's twofold. How many more of these games do you see winning? Because a lot of them are really could go either way. I mean, are y'all going to get Kelly back at any point? And so how many more do you think they're going to win? And then at what point, if it goes really south, do you think he'll finally, you know, get the pink slip?
Tennessee's nature, second question first, Tennessee's nature has been to not do anything till after maybe into early November. That's just been the way they've kind of let the last two terminations play out. And this thing here is just so toxic, though. He's already had a couple guys decommit. There's another one who's rumored to be looking around, a local kid here, Cade Mays, five-star player, who's a tremendous legacy here. His father, a great guy, Kevin Mays, who used to do some radio back with me in my younger days. But, you know, to your point about the season, you're the handicapper. You look around this league and everybody gets ground up with injuries. Tennessee certainly, but that South Carolina team, they're going to see with their two big injuries, including Deebo Samuel, that's a loss they could ill afford to have. They're going to fight you, though. They're going to come into the old stadium and fight you. I think the great unknown about Tennessee is the next time they take the field, are they going to play?
Right. And I mean,
because frankly, they didn't play against Georgia. And so if they played, Brian, if they played, they could beat anybody left on their schedule with the exception of Alabama. Now, at the same time, they could lose any one of those games as well.
Yeah.
And that's why this thing here, people who gamble on the Vols right now literally are in a degenerate category.
Sure.
Because you have no idea what this team's going to do. None.
Yeah, no, I agree. At Alabama is a definite loss, but every single one of the rest of them could go either way. I mean, you should beat Southern Miss, obviously, at home. But, I mean, Southern Miss played Kentucky to a 7-point game. Granted, that was that was in Hattiesburg. But, yeah, the rest of those, all those other teams have plenty of other issues as well. So, Kelly, Todd Kelly, is he going to get back at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think if anything, he looks, there's talk that he might be looking for a possible red shirt next year, but we'll wait and see. He's also a young man that's highly academic, interested in enrolling in medical school. So, all that stuff.
Gotcha.
And we wish him well.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's get to potential candidates. I know, like you pointed out, Florida, you know, I was thinking in my head about coaches a couple weeks ago. Now winning 3 in a row, that's just not going to happen this year for Florida. McElwain will definitely make year 4. And, hey, I hope he does great. I'm rooting for him. I just
– Right.
at some point, man, the frustration with offense, and it literally and statistically and literally figuratively everything, it really has gotten worse since Muschamp left. And now Muschamp's great defensive recruits, a lot of them are in the NFL, and now the defense is starting to slip a little. So we'll see.
Yep.
But a few weeks ago, as I was thinking maybe, you know, we might be looking for a coach soon, you know, I was thinking of all sort of names, and certainly what Jeff Brohm has done at Purdue has impressed me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw you mention Schiano on a tweet or something, or maybe it was in your blog. And by the way, TonyVasilio.com, great blog for all Vols info. Be sure to check it out. And he's on Twitter at Tony Basilio, Basilio spelled B-A-S-I-L-I-O. Obviously, now the one thing that when I was predicting Sumlin to get pink slipped after next week, thinking the Gators are going to put it on him, now I think that's a toss-up game. But
right.
I was thinking A&M would make that move to get the head start on Chip Kelly. So is Chip Kelly a guy potentially in play there? Dan Mullen, obviously, I think will have multiple SEC offers. Hell, I know he's an awkward guy, but I know I'd take him as my coach, and I'm talking about Mike Leach. So there's a lot of quality names out there. Hell, Neil Brown at Troy, the day after Freeze got fired, I wrote that Neil Brown will be the next coach at Ole Miss. I might have been jumping the gun. Neil Brown may have better offers eventually. We'll, you know, we'll see. What are your thoughts on, you know, a couple of gettable and, you know, realistic guys?
You know, Tennessee has a couple ways they can go. They can go to their tree. And their tree is a guy like David Cutcliffe over at Duke, come in and be a caretaker of the program, stabilize things for a couple years. One thing I notice about Tennessee, one thing you'll notice, is that comfort isn't a big deal here. And these guys love to have somebody that they can approach. And again, I talked about Alabama before. Alabama just finally, they kept following that model, and finally they said, screw this, we got to go get some guy and win. That's why they turned their keys over to Saban, you know. And Saban's not here for your warm and fuzzies. He's not going to appear at your barbecue. He's not going to appear at your grand opening. He's not going to appear at your company meeting. And that's what sometimes the Vol head coach right now is asked to do, quite frankly. And if people really knew some of the things that go on, they'd be like, you got to be kidding me. But that's the nature of that deal right now. Chip Kelly is not somebody that's going to fall into that category. We both know that Chip Kelly, his warm and fuzziness, he's a weirdo. He's a weird guy. Like, this is a guy who doesn't even like women. And
right?
He's crying out loud. And most football coaches, I'm not saying he likes men, but he just likes football. I mean, it's kind of his thing. Like, when he coached the Eagles, they all talked about how he was married. That's exactly right. And they were like, he was married one time?
That was a big story.
It was a big story. The guy has no interest in women. I mean, he said, well, you know, I got a girlfriend. And they were like, no, you don't. Because all that guy cares about is football.
Yep.
And good for you. And if you can be that one-dimensional and make it work for you, more power to you. But that whole thing is really interesting, the Chip Kelly deal. So, you know, I look at it and I just say, what's going to happen here? Man, who knows? Who knows? Any of those names you mentioned are certainly guys that are worth pursuing, worth having, worth talking about, all of them. And you know how these searches go. At the end of the day, who knows?
Right. And it's all about timing.
All about timing.
And didn't you guys, I forget if it was maybe when you hired Jones or Dooley, didn't y'all make a run at Cutcliffe? But I think it was very early in his Duke tenure, and that's what I'm talking about with timing. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, did y'all make or at least inquire if he was interested? But I feel like it was very early in his Duke run, and he thought they'd been good to him, and he decided not to. But, you know, now maybe he thinks he's taken maybe Duke to its ceiling and would maybe, you know, be more realistic there on Cutcliffe, that is, obviously.
You have a really great memory, man.
it's getting worse, Tony, but it's still pretty good.
Well, here's what happened. He they had talked with him when the job had opened, and they arrived at Butch Jones. And he was already over at Duke and doing some pretty good things. And what inevitably transpired there is that Peyton Manning was really put out with the way Tennessee handled that, because Cutcliffe thought they were going to come over and give him the job. And they came over and interviewed him. And he was like, I've spent my entire life, working life basically, in your athletic department. I grew up in your athletic department. You people know me. Mike Hamilton, you know me. And it was Mike Hamilton. You might be right. It might have been before when they hired Dooley. At any rate, it was a false start, Brian, because all this runs together for me, because it's all a bunch of nonsense, really, from our administration here. False starts, false flags, what have you. But the deal with him would be, why he would be interesting is he gets more with less than anybody in the country. And you know, from a guy handicapping football games, is there a guy out there that gets more out of his football team than that cat? Is there a more well-coached football team than that cat's football team day in and day out?
Hard-pressed to find it. And handicapping, quarterback play and coaching is so key. And yes, you nailed it. Hard-pressed to find a better coach than Cutcliffe.
I mean, I don't know what kind of play they are against the numbers or whatever, but they've got to be pretty damn good, because he squeezes every ounce. The deal with him would be, could he recruit here? And my deal with him is, my belief is that anybody that's that close to Peyton Manning is not going to let fail. And so if he were to get the job here, by his association with Manning and his close association with Manning, you would have to think that Manning's connections would help that guy get ball players. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna let my boy fail.
Yeah, and
lack of a better way of saying it.
Yeah, and I heard you on your post game show the other day that Peyton, this was what you want, Peyton to be the point man on this hire, and that would would make me think Cutcliffe. Now, how old is he? Is he early 60s?
Yeah, he's an early 60s guy.
Yeah, but he's got a good 7 or 8 years of now I know he had, didn't he have a heart condition back?
He did. You're good, Bri. He did.
That was
really
when he was at Notre Dame post Ole Miss, his health's been great the last decade, though.
He has a few heart issues when he was here in Knoxville. And then you're right, his stop at Notre Dame, he's just a solid guy. He's a solid coach, runs a great offense. They play beautiful football. The question about him here is, does he have enough in his tank to go out and get ball players? And, the deal here is, I mean, hell, Butch Jones has gone out and gotten ball players, but he can't coach a lick. So, at the end of the day, what matters more? I mean, at some point, coaching's got to come into play, and at least David Cutcliffe would give Tennessee a kind of a big boy structure around them, because right now they just don't have that.
Okay, now, am I correct on, and I believe I heard you say it, it's a $9 million buyout for Jones. Now, and you know better than I, so you tell me. This is a question, not a statement of fact on my end. I know I heard Bo Bounds out of Jackson, Mississippi, one of the best sports radio guys around there, and I heard him say on Feinbaum that Mullen is making nearly $5 million, and so basically, you might have to start at $5 million a year just in the negotiation process. Do you think that would take Tennessee out of the mix with Mullen, or is this hire so damn crucial that, and I don't know where Haslam is in all this, because everybody knows he's got more money than you shake a stick at, obviously. How involved is he still there, and would that be a hurdle that Tennessee would not be willing to go, or just not be willing to go for Dan Mullen? Maybe they'd be willing to go for a bigger name, but not necessarily Dan Mullen.
I don't think any amount of money
is a hindrance.
Is out of play here, because like you said, I mean, you're dealing with guys that basically print it.
Right.
And you're dealing with guys who are embarrassed. But, you know, the deal with these guys is, have they had enough? I mean, that's the ultimate question. And if you follow professional sports, it's the same thing. I mean, there are owners who, like Jerry Jones, for instance. Jerry Jones finally got to the point where he had enough, and he let his son Steven start doing things and let other people, like actual player personnel people, start doing things. And it's like my cohort Bino said the other night on the air, the Haslams need to start acting like bankers of this Tennessee program and quit acting like fantasy football players, because they're terrible at fantasy football.
Right.
I mean, you they've made a total mess of the Tennessee program, and I don't mean that personally when I say that.
Right.
But everybody here, you got to understand how powerful that family is. People tell me here, they're like, man, I can't believe you say that out loud about them. And I saw where you tweeted me about that on Sunday as you were listening back to the replay. And the reality is that at some point, you've got to just call things like they are. I mean, if you look at that Cleveland Browns situation and you follow the NFL, they've made that guy's front office is a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
It's a disaster. Like, literally, the NFL should step in and rescue that franchise.
Oh, yeah. When they traded.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, when they released Joe Hayden earlier, I want to say it was right before the season, Hugh Jackson had no idea. You know, I read about
none.
The locker room was incensed.
Right.
And I know Hayden has not had, he hadn't had some of the best years here lately, but you know, he's a team leader and all that. And like that friction, we're not talking about, you know, when they drafted Manziel, when like nobody wanted him except for Haslam. I mean, it's still going on. The GM and Hugh Jackson have a bad relationship. And on that note, the Browns are favored this weekend somehow. And I know the Jets aren't that great, but I'll be on the Jets for sure this weekend. Well, switching up, let's talk your Eagles for a second, because
yeah,
look at them. 3-1 and a one-possession loss at Kansas City is nothing to be ashamed of. And you got Arizona coming in. I tell you, man,
yep,
the Cowboys are digging themselves a hole. I mean, Washington let one get away last night. But, yeah, the Eagles are – I mean, it's way early. And I feel like they got off
way
to a
early.
Similar start
right.
last year. But how you feeling about them? Because, you know, the schedule looks pretty good. I know you got the Niners at home and the Bears
yes.
at home down the road. A lot of W's in the future.
A lot of W's in the future, but NFL Butch Jones coaching them. This poor guy, Peterson – is just lost. He, in the Giants game, went on 4th and 8 on the negative side of the field and should have paid the price for a touchdown, should have gotten beat, and got away with it. And his game management skills are atrocious. And so I want to just say to you, oh, Brian, you know what? Eagles can win that division, puff my chest out. We're off to a 3-1 start. But this guy here, for lack of a better way of putting it, is just a dumb blonde. And guys I know who work in that city, they just tell me, they go, man, this guy just, you know, he says way too much at press conferences. He doesn't know when to shut up. He talks himself into circles. Now, who's that sound like? Hang on. He talks himself into circles. He talks himself into trouble at press conferences. He offers way too much. He's always trying to justify himself. Now, who am I making?
He's
NFL Butch Jones.
Butch Jones.
Hey, it's uncanny. It's uncanny.
I said last weekend I was on Chris Vernon's show on the Ringer,
mm-hmm.
and he asked me if I saw Butch's press conference on Monday, and I go, Verno, I'm not going to miss a Butch press conference the rest of the year. But I lied. I lied. I did not see the one yesterday. Do I need to go back and watch? And didn't he do
no.
some Memphis Touchdown Club, or did he keep it very vanilla?
He was at the Memphis Touchdown Club, and an article was written about that by Jeff Calkins down there, and Jeff said that Butch was shut out again, is how he described it, because basically nobody showed up. There was like a string of people wanting to get his autograph at the end of it. I mean, that's what happens when you let these guys dangle, like this poor guy is dangling. Mm-hmm. He gets into no man's land. And I had a caller today. I was saying, why haven't they pulled the plug on him? And the guy goes, well, they need to let him go down there to Alabama and take his beating like a man. And I'm like, well, good gosh, it's come to that now.
Yeah, that was bad of that caller. But I will say, speaking of a similar situation, I did think it was borderline criminal that Hugh Freeze did not have to sit on the sidelines and take that pimp slap the other night.
Oh, no question. Hugh Freeze and a couple of his honeys.
Sure. Yeah, a
couple could have sat over there and taken that like a man.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, before we let you get out of here, and we're talking to Tony Basilio,
man.
Check out his website, TonyBasilio.com. He has great Vols info, and he's got several correspondents that help him. I always am checking it out during basketball season, and certainly when things get interesting like they are now, and always during Florida-Tennessee week. Great stuff in the blog at TonyBasilio.com. Follow him on Twitter at Tony Basilio. Basilio is spelled B-A-S-I-L-I-O. I was talking too fast and thought I might have misspelled that there for a second. Okay, before we let you get out of here, let's talk a little bit around the SEC right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's talk about my Gators. So LSU's having some struggles, and mm-hmm. Geis is questionable. They've got Weathersby, the offensive tackle, is questionable this week. But Tyree Cleveland, who has made everybody not really miss Antonio Callaway, he is doubtful. That is huge for Florida. I mean, I'm not telling you to put your handicap and hat on it, but I mean, just don't you got to give edge to Florida here this week at home?
I think the Gators will continue to roll. Look, LSU is in disarray, obviously. And if you look at that game they played the other night, and I watched basically the complete game, they were lucky to score two touchdowns because they came via turnovers. And I know, like you're talking about, Geis's return and this and that, and they're a little healthier. But the bottom line with LSU is they made a crazy hire.
Yep.
With a guy who had a checkered track record, and Florida's coached by a winner. You may not want to hear that, and Florida fans may not want to hear that, but this guy is going to win enough to keep his job. He's probably going to win the division again because it's in Georgia's head, and I'm not sold on that Georgia team that kind of slogged around on offense until Tennessee's defense was just on the field so much that they were able to have their way with them on the second half of that football game.
That's the story of the Gators for years. The defense plays great for the first half, but after so many three and outs, your defense gets gassed, and that's exactly what happened.
Oh, yeah, has to. It has to. But here's the thing. Florida fans don't want to deal with this because they don't like this McElwain guy. Man, he can flat-out coach. I mean, his record in those one touchdown games –
yeah.
When you've won 9 of 10 of those suckers at this level in this league, where it's a couple of decisions by a coach that separates the winners from the losers, I mean, make no mistake about it. That sucker can flat out coach some football. And I look at what Florida did to get out of and I realize the offensive coordinator has been under a lot of fire, and rightfully so. But they were so resourceful at Kentucky in that really tough environment, in using that wildcat formation and some of the other things that they did, those wrinkles that they used at perfect times, and they perfectly executed them. Now, granted, Cleveland made some incredible catches, some incredible plays, incredible adjustments. All that stuff's true. But, man, give them credit. They scratched every ounce out of that team in that tough environment to keep that win streak going. And it's not a bad Kentucky football team they beat either.
No. I agree on all points. And I've been told that was the most electric that, I think they call it Kroger Field now, but Commonwealth Stadium has ever been.
Ever.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So, and they found a way to get it done.
I know a couple guys that were up there. Yeah, but I know a couple guys that were there, and they said, man, there was no way in hell Florida was getting out of there with a win until they got out of there with that win. And they had to make those plays. I mean, they made one play after another. But, hey, I give a lot of credit to that embattled OC. You know, that's the deal in this league. It's a fine line between winning and losing. And Butch Jones, in these games that matter, has found a way to lose, and McElwain's found a way to win. And I understand at Florida, it's not just about winning that division. I get that. And they're nowhere near Alabama. I know that.
We all know
but
that.
But still, you've got to give the guy credit, man. You've got to give the guy credit.
Yeah. Yeah, the half glass full with McElwain is that he has yet to lose an SEC game at home. That's
man.
Pretty good.
He's two. Wow.
The only loss at home came to Florida State his first year. And maybe that doesn't happen if not for Will Grier's suspension. Okay, just a couple more. I'm not keeping you too long, am I?
No, it's
okay.
Awesome, man.
Great.
My pleasure.
Cool. All right, let's talk about the other hot seat coaches. Belima and Barry Odom. Okay, all right, so Belima, huge game this week at South Carolina because you know they lose at Alabama next week. They're 2-2. And then Auburn at home, at Ole Miss. They finished with Mississippi State, Missouri. Missouri's really gotten humbled here the last couple weeks. And what do you think happens with Belima? Is it going to get so bad? And he had a conniption fit with the media after they got smashed by whoever it was 2 weeks ago. I'm forgetting in terms of talking about Barry Odom. And any ideas who goes to Ole Miss? That's the question's too tough to answer before they go in front of the infractions committee anyway. But any thoughts on those?
Yeah, who's taking that? Yeah, who's taking that Ole Miss job? And the problem is, too, is you also have this early signing period, and so the entire schedule is now condensed, which is what's going to be really interesting to see. Like Tennessee, when's it going to open? Arkansas, when it's going to open? Those jobs are going to open. A&M, that job's going to open. I mean, those people down there have more they have designs on grander things than what they've gotten. So a lot of these jobs, like we're talking about, and then Missouri, you know, if Missouri had a do-over, Brian, and I said this today on the air, and I know it's politically incorrect, but they had that guy with the hunger strike. What they should have done instead of capitulating to the grievance culture, because basically what happened now is their enrollment in their school is so far down, and they should have handled that completely differently than they did. But since they didn't, they're now paying the price. They continue to pay the price. And, you know, I just don't know what happens with that football program long term. I mean, it's health. They're kind of in the same spot that Penn State was several years back, which is to say a death penalty without a death penalty. That's kind of how they feel in terms of their place in this league. But what they should have done with that guy that was out there protesting or whatever he was doing, you know, the hunger strike guy, say, look, dude, here's a Big Mac. Good luck to you. I hope you eat it. If you don't and you die, I mean, there's really not much we can do for you. Good luck to you. But, man, they could not have handled that any more poorly than they did. And look at them now. Don't you feel sorry for them?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they have no chance.
Yeah.
Zero chance in this league in the next 10 years of competing. Zero.
Yeah, and their second best receiver either got the boot or quit or something the other day. Okay, let's go to Belima. Let's say he wins at South Carolina, and they are
right.
2-point favorite. That would make them 3-2. They lose at Alabama 3-3. I mean, I doubt they're going to beat Auburn at home. I mean, Jared Cornelius was a crushing injury, losing your best receiver of an already inexperienced group. So they go to 3-4. But then I think they win at Ole Miss. I think they beat East Carolina to go 5-4. And then I'm going to skip two games and say a home win over Missouri 6-4. So then at LSU and Mississippi State at home, you could go 0-2, 1-1, or 2-0. If they split and they're 7-5, and I think Belima's buyout is what, 12, 15 million? I think they want to keep Brett Belima. He's a likable guy.
Yeah.
Maybe not politically correct, but you're not going to find a hotter Mrs. Arkansas football out there. hot wife is what I'm saying. And, you know, he just doesn't say things like Jones says to just piss off the fan base. I think 7-5, based on the buyout, I think he probably survived. And I hope he survives. He's a good coach. It's not like Arkansas is an easy job.
It's an impossible job in this league right now. And look, these teams that are land that are just displaced by geography, who's it working out for? It's working out for Penn State, but it's taken them 25 years to make it work since they went into the Big Ten. Think about that. It's taken them 25 years, and they had a little spell there in the mid-90s where they were pretty good, but it's taken them 25 years to make their displaced program work for them. West Virginia, they're completely displaced. Makes no sense. Nebraska is completely displaced. And look at what's happened to their program since they've become displaced. It's nearly impossible. Texas A&M, they're displaced. I mean, I don't know if you ever stopped and thought about that, but that's just geographically. And then I had Mike Slive a couple years ago on my radio show tell me there's geographic integrity in the Southeastern Conference. And I said, for what? If you're playing a game, like a game of human operation, like what are you talking about? There's no way there's geographical integrity in the league, but that's what they want to sing from on their songbook. But the Missouris of the world, the A&Ms of the world, the Arkansas of the world, the reality is they don't belong in the conference they're in. It's really difficult to win in a league that you don't belong in to begin with. It doesn't make any geographical sense. And then could it be any harder on Arkansas than to be in the Southeastern Conference West? I mean, even in a so-so year like this year is in this league, like you were just rattling off loss. Well, they'll win that one. Maybe because Ole Miss, you know, they're down this year, and who knows what's left in Mississippi State. Well, you know what? Those two teams still have players, and it's still going to be a handful for Arkansas the end of the day. So, you know, I would hope that cooler heads on that deal prevail and that he makes it through, because I'll ask you this. Is Arkansas going to hire a better coach than Brett Bielema? I know Tennessee can find a better coach than Butch Jones. I know that, and so do you.
Yeah.
Are they going to get a more accomplished football coach down there to take their job?
That's what I was saying going into the year. I was saying if Arkansas fans think he's on the hot seat, they're nuts. But, you know, then, you know, when you got embarrassed with TCU and just really just – I mean, I was saying 2 or 3 weeks ago that I think only 6 coaches in the SEC should really feel comfortable. I'll say 7 now that McElwain's won a couple more games. And a name
right.
I forgot. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're right.
Yeah. And I was going to go, a name I forgot to mention as I was, before I got you out here, I wanted to ask a little bit about the college hoop scandal, but that made me think of Petrino that I did not think about. Obviously, with Jurich out at Louisville, that reduced his buyout to $4.25 million. So that makes me think Bobby Petrino is going to be coaching in the SEC next year, guaranteed. What are your thoughts on if his stench too much for Tennessee, or do you think, you know, that they would consider him?
Here's the question. Again, I'm gonna answer your question with a question, which is poor form. But it's just worth looking at as you watch this Tennessee thing unfold. How desperate are they, and how tired are the big money people of being a laughingstock? If they're really as tired of it, I'll just give you, for instance, on our post-game deal the other night, I went around the room. I had four at the end of the night that I was talking to. I had Tony Robinson, who's a legend here, just was featured in a 30 for 30 on the Washington Redskins, a scab year. He's got a great story. And he's back out of back into life after being incarcerated, and just a really neat guy. John Bruin, who played here and then played with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for several years, was in my studio. Albert Hainsworth was on the phone lines. And then we talked to another Vol who played in the NFL, coached in the NFL, and Jerry Colquitt. And I went around. I said, guys, Bobby Petrino. And all those guys were like, look, several years ago, I'd have told you no. Now, bring it on. You know, at some point, everybody just gets worn down. You know, you just, it's like having a cold.
Yeah.
You just kind of get worn down. And that's where this place is right now. And so is the big money there? I don't know, but I agree with you. Bobby Petrino, I mean, there's got to be a place for a horny old man somewhere.
Yeah. And hey, the dude can coach, plain.
And he can coach.
Plain and simple. Hey, a quick story, yeah. Quick story on Tony Robinson. Okay, I'm originally from Quincy, Florida, which is like 20 miles west of Tallahassee. You might remember the Eminem boys, Vernon Maxwell and Andrew Moten. Anyway, Andrew Moten was from
Absolutely.
Quincy.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't know that. Okay, go ahead.
And Dexter Jackson, the Super Bowl MVP, was from Quincy. But my story about Tony Robinson is, as I was a kid, so I'm going to think that his senior year at Tallahassee Leon High School, I'm just guessing, you would probably know the exact year he got to Tennessee. I'm going to guess it was around 82, 83, 84. Is that correct?
81. Very good. You're in the ballpark.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so his senior year of high school, I saw him play at Quincy Shanks and threw for about 500 yards.
How good was that cat in high school?
Oh my
Brian?
Gosh.
I can imagine.
Oh my gosh.
Like a freak show. He must have, because he would have been Randall Cunningham without the cocaine deal.
Right.
That's the career he was going to have. And he's not bitter one bit. He doesn't feel sorry for himself one bit. He doesn't. And, you know, that drug use gets a hold of a lot of people.
Sure.
And when it calls your name, I mean, you're just lucky you're not in the graveyard.
Yeah.
So thank God he's still with us. But, man, looking at those old videos of him and just being a college football fan at that time, when you see a talent like that, you just do not forget it. And I was in Philly during Cunningham's years, and you just do not forget a Tony Robinson or Randall Cunningham. And I can put them side by side and say both guys are great players. And T-Rob would have had that kind of career in the NFL, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a shame it didn't happen. But that's great that he's got his life together and not bitter and all that good stuff you said. Okay. Before we get you out of here, I think I've said that like five times already. And this is total speculation on my part, but that's what these podcasts are for. We speculate.
Absolutely.
Hey, this college hoop scandal, we don't know where it's going. But I know that I'm going to be surprised, and maybe it's next week, maybe it's 7 months from now, but yep. I'm going to be shocked if at some point it does not land in Lexington, Kentucky at the feet of John Calipari. Any thoughts on the potential of that? And if you've heard anything about Bruce Pearl, I'm almost surprised that he's not been canned yet.
You know, it's interesting. Right now, it looks like he's going to hold. He's going to benefit right now from a couple things. One, it looks like Chuck Person was just so rogue that it was over the top. And so that benefits Bruce. The other thing is that Bruce, since he's been on Auburn's campus, has done
a lot of goodwill. Sure.
A lot of great things, and good for him. And he's, you know, people like him in that community, and he chose basically to condescend and come to them because – and that's just how that's viewed there. The other thing he's got, though, is that Jay Jacobs scandal.
And there,
you know, it's a
he's
good,
gonna be out
good timing for him. That's right. And so it's good timing for Bruce because they got bigger fish to fry than him. And so talking to somebody close to that the other day, the word I get is that, hey, don't count Bruce Pearl out just yet. He's, you know, politically behind the scenes, he's in pretty good shape. And I said, hey, good for him. I hope it works out for him because he did a hell of a job here. And look, Bruce Pearl's not perfect. Bruce Pearl's not going to invite me over for dinner anytime soon because we were pretty honest about him when the axe was falling on him. But I was talking with somebody that I really respect off the record about this deal, who knows a lot of people and knows a lot of moving parts. And it isn't just Calipari who ought to be nervous. This guy told me that when the FBI confiscated that computer from the inner workings of the EYBL program, and that's just Nike Summer League and all the trees and all the, you know, if the bodies are truly on that thing, you know, we say the bodies are buried there. Sure. If there are bones, if there's DNA there that's trackable, he told me that And then once people start talking, because these guys that have been implicated are going to talk. I mean, that's just the nature of it. And as they dig more and more into it, and like you said, we're not going to know. We're going to wake up one day and there'll be 100 new names on that thing. I think that's what's going to happen. He believes that potentially you could see a flushing out of most of what you see right now of major college basketball. He thinks it's that pervasive.
Like 50 coaches fired, 50 head coaches, like something to that nature?
Yes.
Wow.
And here's my hope. Here's my hope. I hope it happens before the start of the season, so maybe Rick Barnes' basketball team here could make the NCAA tournament if they can get 50 coaches out of the way. little dark humor. But the truth is, this thing has systematically been going on. Look, I would love the grandstand and go, yeah, Rick Pitino. But here's the deal. John Calipari, as you said. Here's the thing, though. Roy Williams, fake college. Fact. Still has a job. The guy at Syracuse, unspeakable things happened under him. Still has a job. The guy at Duke, cheats like a champion. Still has a job. I mean, come on.
I've been saying
Krzyzewski
and Bobby Bowden have had the America tricked for about a half century.
No, there is no question about it that Mike Krzyzewski is an absolute cheater and has been and gets away with it and pontificates
and is arrogant.
Yes, a complete ass. And should have been exposed a long time ago. And by the way, people say all these things about Cal. I'm gonna surprise you. People I talk to in that sport tell me that Cal's one of the best dead level guys in that sport. In terms of, if an assistant coach needs a job, he'll make phone calls for him. If a very loyal guy, very good guy behind the scenes. I mean, I hate to feel that way. I have trouble hating that guy because I know he's a pretty good dude. All in all, Coach K, on the other hand, his kids, his daughters, they curse, they scream and yell at referees, and then he's all golly chucks, geez. I mean, he's George Carlin acting like he's the Pope. Are you kidding me?
Just like Bowden, man. Just like Bobby Bowden.
Just like Bowden. We see it the same way, man. And the thing I love about Bowden, and I used to say this about Hugh Freeze, was Hugh Freeze a Southern football to the core. And what I mean by that is, say, God bless you, God bless you, God bless you, God bless you, and then cheat like hell.
Yeah. When they throw too much religion in your face, you know they're hiding something. At least that's been
experience.
I mean,
exactly. Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
Yep.
Live your life, man. I will judge you by the fruits of your life, not by what comes out of your mouth. Come on, man.
And that's why Freeze is being judged so harshly, and that's why the NCAA should hammer Ole Miss, because they had the audacity to have that preposterous plan of, oh, we're going to go in front of the NCAA because our head coach is such a holier-than-thou man of principle that this was a rogue assistant and a couple of rogue boosters. He would never, ever do anything like this. And the guy's been calling hookers on every road trip. It's insane.
And he knew it. That's the saddest thing about it, is he did it, and he knew he was doing it. And at some point, don't you just shut up?
Right. Yep.
But, Brian, it's been fun, man.
Man, yeah.
How long have we gone today? How long have we gone here?
We have gone 54 minutes, and I love.
Oh, it's like a new record. It's like a new world record.
I loved every single second of it. It has been an honor and a pleasure. Tony Basilio, follow him on Twitter, at Tony Basilio. Check out his fifth quarter Garza Law Firm quarter reaction post-game show after Vols games every week. And check out his blog, TonyBasilio.com. Thank you, my man. So appreciative for the time, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Well, I'd be blessed, man. Be cool, okay? See you, buddy.
All right, buddy. Be good. All right, folks. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with more of GG18. Welcome back. I'm your host, Bron Edwards, Games Galore, episode 18, as we move into week 6 of the college football season. Week 5 in the NFL. What a wild wrong side winner and total, or wrong side slash total winners last night. Very reminiscent of the Northwestern Ohio State game in 2013, which was a game I actually talked about at the Vegas Insider seminar. Or actually, it might have been the that might have been already when VI wasn't doing a seminar anymore, and it was the Westgate Superbook that was doing it. Whatever the case, I remember I had talked at the seminar about what a great spot that was for Northwestern. They had 2 weeks off, and Ohio State was coming off. Or actually, I have it right here in the magazine. I'll tell you who Ohio State was playing the week before that.
Games Galore 18. We're legal now.
We are legal. That's right. That's right. We can't drink until 21, though.
Yeah, we can't start drinking during the podcast until then.
21. Okay, in 2013, Ohio State, before they played Northwestern. Yeah, I knew they would have had a 60-minute battle with Wisconsin prior to that. And let me see who Northwestern had played before that. In 13. Oh, yeah. They had played, well, first off, after a game at Cal to start the season, they had played Syracuse, Western Michigan, and Maine at home, then got 2 weeks to prepare. And Wisconsin was coming off a war against Wisconsin, and I just said it would be a perfect spot for Northwestern as a home underdog. And as it turned out, Northwestern led outright most of the game. I believe it was Trevin Simino, the freaking Broncos quarterback these days, who I never dreamed of playing in the NFL. He threw a horrible pick deep in their own territory, completely swung the game, and Zeke Elliott scored a couple touchdowns, so it turned sideways. But literally, I forget how many Northwestern. Oh, wait, it's right here. Northwestern was catching 6.5. So they're still ahead of the number. I mean, Ohio State had been trailing outright the whole game. Ohio State gets ahead by, was it 3? Or no, that's right. They were ahead by 6. They were ahead 34-30. Not ahead by 6. They were ahead by 4. 34-30. And Northwestern's plus 6.5. And they've been ahead of the number the entire game, literally the entire game. And sort of last night with KC and Washington, Northwestern, had a play. I think they had forced a punt. They got a play at their own. Oh, and I'm remembering they also got a BS 4th-and-1 play that he clearly had gotten the first down, and they reviewed it and didn't change the spot. It was horrible. So I was pissed about that, too, because I had Northwestern on the money line as well. I mean, I had called Northwestern to win that game outright all summer. And so they get the ball back after a punt at, like, their own 25 or 30. And last night, I guess, well, touchback goes to the 25 now in the NFL. So own 25. So it was very, very similar, if not identical. And Northwestern runs a pass, you know, but they had a pass like 10, 15 yards up the field in the lateral start. And the last one gets deflected. The ball goes into the end zone. A Northwestern guy had a chance to fall on it, which would have made it a safety and 36-30, and you still would have won by the hook. And I would imagine I probably had the half point bought to 7. And I also would imagine I probably got a better number early in the week on that as well. So I don't remember all the specifics, but I'm looking at Phil Steel Mag says the line was 6.5. And the Northwestern guy did not fall on it. Eventually, Ohio State guy did, barely before he went out of bounds at the back of the end zone. And I still think that on Van Pelt's show with Stanford Steve, when they go into the Bad Beats segment, which they do a great job on, and obviously last night will be on there. But anyway, if I remember right, the Ohio State guy that recovered it, I mean, the clock had already struck 0. So literally, Northwestern was ahead of the number for all 60 minutes of the game, but then lost when Ohio State recovered in the end zone. So exact same thing last night, but even double fold because it affected the over and the under as well. As so did you see what happened to Harbaugh?
I did not.
Okay, here's the deal. KC kicks a field goal to go ahead 23-20. Okay, they were – so Washington was in winning outright most of the game. So Chiefs are -7, so they go ahead by 3. They're up by three. They're not going to cover. There's 4 seconds left.
Right.
They kick the ball, a touchback. So there's 4 seconds left.
Yeah.
And Washington's been covering the spread the whole game, literally.
Yeah.
And Washington throws a pass for like 10 yards. And, you know, then they start lateraling, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like throwing
yeah,
it backwards,
yeah.
Trying to get a long play. Well, like the third lateral, it goes to an O-lineman who drops it. And right when he dropped it, I just stood up because I had Kansas City in the over.
Right.
I had no business. I should have been 0-2, a huge loser last night.
Right.
I just started going, oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yes. Defense guy picks it up. He picks it up. He scoops it. And he's going to the end zone. And because of the camera angle, Kirk Cousins is the Washington quarterback. He went for the strip of the ball.
Right.
And my view was kind of blocked. And I thought he had stripped it at the 1 yard line until I was like, no, did he strip it? And then the Washington guy, he's kind of got the ball like hidden under his side where the camera's not facing. So I don't really know until he finally holds it up in the air halfway through the end zone.
Nice.
And I'm like, no flags. Please no flags. Please no flags. And so that made it because it was the over under was 48 and there were 43 points. Combined at that time, so it made the over and Kansas City hit. And so for all you that had the under in Washington, you deserve to win. I feel for you. I've been there. My worst beats ever were that Northwestern Ohio State, and then there was a back when they did the bracket buster games between the mid-majors. It's probably 7 or 8 years ago. I remember where I was in Atlanta at my computer at 2901 Lenox Way, just south of the mall, and I'm
sweating.
The game wasn't on TV.
Okay.
And I believe I had Nevada minus, God, I want to say 2 or 2.5. Okay. And I'm watching it on the Game Center on the internet. Okay. And the Game Center says, or Game Tracker, we used to call them Game Centers. It says 0-0. 1 second, you know, not 0.1 second, but like 1 second left.
Right.
Okay. Nevada, who I've got like minus 2 or 2.5, is going to the line to shoot 2 free throws.
Right.
They missed the first. Okay. Yeah. So I'm thinking, a game is not over until all possibilities are exhausted. And so in my mind, I'm going, okay, well, he missed that one. So if he misses this one, the guy has to literally catch it. Heave it with one hand 90 feet to the basket and it go in. Okay.
Right.
That's what has to happen.
That's the only option.
And they're down by 4. So there's a chance that he would just grab the rebound and not even do that because a 3-pointer is not going to win him the game.
Right.
Son of a bitch. And I've never seen a highlight, a replay of it. So I don't know
right. What
happened. But literally, all of a sudden, my Game Center, like they're up for like 84-80. And he misses the second free throw, and all of a sudden it says 84-83. And I think it was Joey Rodriguez, the point guard for VCU that took him to the Final Four a few years later. Joey Rodriguez makes a 90-foot jumper. I never even got to see the replay of it. So those are the two worst bad beats of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Washington and underbacker, especially if you had both, will point to last night's Monday Night Football in the same regard. All right, moving on to college. We've got a Wednesday game for the first time this year tomorrow. Arkansas State and Georgia Southern. You can check out my pick at BrianEdwardsSports.com. I got it locked and loaded. I got the winner. Trust me, check it out. Louisville at NC State on Thursday. Great Thursday night game. Louisville currently 3.5, some books at 4. I've got the winner on that one too. Check it out on BrianEdwardsSports.com. I'll give you my pick on Friday, as I usually give them all. But sales have not been going well, even though the results have been going well. I think I'm giving them out too much. So forgive me if I'm being stingy. So we all got to make a living. I got to pay Harbo.
He's being too loose.
I got to pay Harbo's salary. All right. So we need help. Hey, we need to get that tip jar going too, by the way.
Yeah, let's do that.
if I feel wrong doing it, but you know what?
Hey, if you want to support us, you can.
If you go 4-0 because of my help, hey, throw us $5. Every buck that counts, you know. Because, I mean, Jim Rohde sure as hell hadn't paid us for any of his appearances on this show like he said he was going to.
The legal counsel?
Yeah. I loved your tone when you said that.
He's going to send a bill to us. The legal counsel.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck collecting that, bud. Boise State at BYU. Look, BYU is the most disappointing team in America, and their quarterback is questionable, and not Tanner Mangum, their real quarterback, who remains out indefinitely. Look, Boise State's got its issues. Hell, they had their worst home loss on the Smurf turf. First off, they hadn't lost more than seven at home in more than a decade, and it was their worst home loss since 2001 when Virginia went in there a couple weeks ago. But Boise State has had 2 weeks to prepare, which obviously gave Rippon a little more time to shake off that concussion, even though he did play last game. He had missed the one game before that, maybe even two, when Cozart, the Kansas transfer, was playing. Anyway, this is just a play against BYU, okay? They're number 129 out of 130 FBS teams in scoring. They are averaging 12 points a game, and I think they got a defensive touchdown in one of those. So I'm just fading BYU. Boise State is no big shakes. Hell, Brian Harsin might be on the hot seat if they lose this game and this season goes south. And then, by the way, I'm not trying to get all these coaches fired. It's just reality. This is just reality. I'm fine if Butch gets fired. And I actually want someone to get fired because I don't want him to put up with all that bullshit out at Texas A&M because he'll be fine. He'll have a head job or an offensive coordinator in the NFL. So I just want what's best for someone. But if he goes 9-3 and if they win at Florida, which is doable, they could go 9-3. And the line is too big with Alabama this week. Now, I don't know that I'm going to take to A&M, but that line is too big. What did I make it? I only made them 19.5. Wow, maybe I will take A&M. It's 26.5 right now. But again, and I always say this is Alabama, you've got to put in your handicap a defensive and a special teams touchdown. You have to put that in your handicap. It happens every week. That 66-3 beatdown kind of lost my attention. But I think they did have a pick six last week. Yeah, I remember watching on the highlights. All right, the Gators are down to 3. They were basically 6 Sunday night, and I got a little bit of LSU. I had a little bit of Florida at +2 in the games of the year, like I had Washington State +10 in the games of the year last week. And I hope I told the listeners last week that I like Washington State. We did the show on Tuesday. I'm sure I said that. I'm sure
you did.
I did. Yeah. That was another one I called during the summer. And hey, when Washington State goes to Oregon this week, Oregon's got injuries galore. Their quarterback's out. Their backup quarterback is questionable. I did actually see that Royce Freeman, their best running back, their best playmaker, did get upgraded to probable. He had been listed as questionable. But also, they have got a lot of guys that are questionable forgive the bumbled pronouns here, but Kalana Apalu.
Oh, you got it right.
Yeah, I'm going to guess he's Samoan. He's out for the year, one of their better linebackers. And also, I'm looking down to see these names. Khalil Oliver, starting safety, he's questionable this week. God, who else was they got a lot of other key players that are question marks this week. Oh, A.J. Hodgkins is a question mark this week. I'm sorry. I know who it was. The receivers, Charles Nelson and Dylan Mitchell, their two top receivers are questionable. Now, it's Tuesday. They could all be upgraded to probable. This is what's going on Tuesday as we record here in Blue Mountain Beach, Florida. Okay. Look, it's never a good idea to lay a lot of points with Kentucky, but this Missouri team, like Tony B was saying, and God, I enjoyed that segment with Tony B.
It was great.
And I hope it draws a lot of UT listeners, and I hope they continue to listen to this segment. Come join us every week, Games Galore Pod, folks. We like Vols. I'm a Gator. You probably hate Gators, but
that's okay.
Hey, y'all should have beat us 3 of the last 4, or actually should have a 4-game winning streak over us. We all know that. Hell, the one we won 10-9, we were probably less deserving of winning that than the one Greer to Callaway. And I don't know why in the hell on injury reports on Don Best, on Sports Insights, on the VI Live Odds feed, It said every week, it said all the suspended guys are out, And it says all of them are out this week, but for some reason, Antonio Callaway is questionable. And the reality is that Antonio Callaway, of all the people, is the one most likely to never wear a Gator uniform again. So I don't ignore that if you're looking at injury reports, folks. Trying to decipher one of these stats I have. Oh, and Eastern Michigan, who covered at Kentucky last week, 7-1 against the spread, their last 8 as a road dog, and they are catching double digits somewhere this week. Where are they at? Some MAC school. Go ahead, Harbo.
I was just going to say, that was a decent game between the two.
Oh, yeah.
Eastern held up.
Yeah, I mean, it was a total flat spot for Kentucky. I hate I didn't take Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan won outright at Rutgers earlier this year. Not that Rutgers is any good. Did you see your boy Wilton Spates out for a few weeks?
I did.
But I don't know that O'Korn is. In fact, I was surprised at the start of 16 that O'Korn didn't win that job. O'Korn started as a true freshman at Houston, was pretty good. So I don't know that that's really a bad thing for you guys.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, O'Korn, I didn't watch much of the Purdue game. Did he play most of that game, or did Spate play?
I think they were flipping off. I can't remember, to be honest with you.
Well, I know you were on a dude's trip. You were knocking them back. That's
yeah,
okay.
It was on the wall.
You were
know,
just watching the scoreboard.
It. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, by the way, Ohio State's laying way too many points, and a kudos to DJ Durkin. Ohio State's minus 31 against Maryland. Okay, DJ Durkin's down to his third-string quarterback, and they went to Minnesota as a double-digit dog and won outright. And props to DJ Durkin. He's doing a hell of a job at Maryland. And, boy, the semis are lucky they got out of Winston-Salem with a W. And, man, I was impressed with Wolford, Wake's QB, last week. He was playing well. Wake Forest really should have won that game. But the Noles get off the schneid. But now they are a home underdog. And I've been meaning to look this up for the last damn 24 hours, but I'll look it up right now. I hate doing this while we're on the show, but I think it is very real. I think it's a quick look up. How many times FSU's been a home dog under Jimbo? I think it was only that game against Oklahoma a few years back. Oh, no, I'm wrong there. Well, in 2011, yeah, they were 0-1 as a home dog, and it was that Oklahoma trip. But last year as a home dog, FSU was 1-1. Who the hell were they a home dog to last year? Oh, duh, Clemson. And they covered. And well, the other one was what? Where are they a home dog? They're not a home dog. That stat is wrong in Phil Steele's mag.
What?
No. Phil Steele's mag does not make mistakes. Way. Well, it says they went 1-1 as a home dog. Clemson's the only game that they're a home dog. I mean, unless I'm complete. Look, when it doesn't say at Harbo,
right?
And it says a plus. I mean, the one against Clemson is the only one that says a plus when they're not at somebody, right? I mean,
let me see here. Sorry, yeah. I was just looking at UFC.
I mean, they didn't. I mean, they can't be counting the Orange Bowl as a home game. You know what? That might be. No, because it says it's a loss. They were a home dog to Michigan, or they're not a home dog. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I think
you're
right.
Phil Steele messed up.
Maybe.
I saw also on the Arkansas State page, there was a misspelling. Hey,
you need to call him up.
Phil, you are forgiven, man. This magazine rocks. I am not calling you out. I promise. And hey, look at Wazoo. Underdogs again this week with Oregon and all those injuries. Good chance I'll be on Wazoo. Hey, I was impressed with Texas Tech last week, taking Oak State to the wire. And I don't know if that says more about Texas Tech being good or Oak State not being as good as I was thinking early in the year. And especially as we see how bad Pitt is. And look at Georgia Tech and Taquan Marshall. Georgia Tech has been covering numbers. And boy, they should have really won that game against Tennessee. They're perfect against the spread. And I think they're off this week, and they go to Miami next week. And Miami, I want to say it's a Thursday game. And I always say that favors the home team, but not in this scenario when Georgia Tech has an open date and Miami's coming off a rivalry game at FSU. And yes, indeed, that is the case. So it's a short week for Miami, But it's not a short week for Georgia Tech. So my rules about these midweek games being advantageous to the home team do not apply in this scenario. You know, Northwestern bowed up and played pretty good last week against Wisconsin at Camp Randall. Had the ball down seven, and I don't know why their quarterback ran out of the end zone, Dan Orlovsky style. And look at Virginia favored against Duke. Hey, boy, Bronco Mendenhall, I hailed that hire when it happened, but then they go 2-10 last year. But look at them 3-1, and Binkert, the transfer from ECU, is playing well. And UCF back in the top 25. You know Nebraska's coming after Scott Frost, and he can't say no to them. So that there's one coaching search already solved for you. Looking at other games here. And for Sunbelt lovers, and I know that's not many of you, but hey, all these games pay the same, folks. And I hope anyone that's
true
took my New Mexico State last week, you know, I was hyping it plus 17, which is what it was all week. I woke up Saturday morning, we're on Central Time here, even though we're in Florida, folks. So that's 11 a.m. kick for my Gators and this New Mexico State-Arkansas game. And I just woke up like 10 minutes before the game started. And I looked up real quick, New Mexico State, they had moved to 18.5 and 19. So I got some more of it. And they lost 42-24. So I got back what I would have lost on the 17. And I hope anyone who took my advice waited till the last minute to bet it. But I doubt that was the case. Especially my season purchasers that I send early. Go ahead, Harbo.
Oh no! I was just.
Oh, you're playing your bitter rival this week.
It's a big game, man.
What do you think the spread is? Do you know yet?
I don't know what the spread is.
All
tell
right.
Me.
Well, you're at home,
right?
So guess what you think the spread would be. Now, Michigan State won against Iowa last week, but they got smashed at home by Notre Dame by 20 the week before.
I have no idea, man. What are we at?
You're at 11 all of a sudden, but this thing was 13.5, 14 earlier today. Let's see.
I was going to say 7.
But the Wilton Spate news is old news. Or maybe I just saw those 13s and 13.5s last night, and maybe the Wilton Spate news was like late last night.
Maybe.
Yeah, so y'all have come down. But I don't think going from Wilton Spate to O'Korn is a 3-point slide in money. Let me go look.
Well, I looked it up, and it looked like O'Korn played most.
Went to the Purdue box score?
Yeah, it looked like he played a lot in the last one.
Let me see.
Sorry, I've been distracted by Derek Lewis today.
Oh, God, the Black Beast. And has he been doing some great Instagram?
Well, I read an article where he was he's mad because the article claimed he missed.
You know he's kidding half the time.
Well, he missed the McRib, and he was pissed about it.
Of course. He is pissed about it. That's real pissed.
Somebody's got to pay for it.
Yeah. It's Fabricio Verdum. Yeah. Did you see Verdum was trying to go after Tony Ferguson, a 155er, the other day?
No.
And apparently made gay slurs that obviously he was saying them in Portuguese or Spanish.
Right.
And but the ball's on Ferguson. Ferguson's doing an interview, and Verdum is kind of next to him, right, and he's saying something. And Ferguson goes, "Hold up, man." And, like, literally, look at me, Harbo.
Yeah.
Put his hand up, going, "Hold up, man. This is my interview." And that's when Verdum got pissed. And the UFC is making him go to, like, counseling for, or maybe even donate part of his check or something this week.
What?
I made that part up about donating part of the check. Now, what the UFC is doing is UFC 216 will go on this week, but they are dedicating $1 million of the gate to the victims' families, and just what a horrific scene out in Vegas. And our thoughts and best wishes go to all who had friends, family injured. That was utter insanity. And, man, that was just nuts. And I actually was awake late Sunday night.
Me too.
And I was on Twitter, and I saw people start tweeting about it. But at that point, and I put it on CNN or Fox News or whatever.
Right.
God, you you say those channels sometimes these days, you get some looks, man.
People are going to get angry.
Yeah. And I just try to keep politics out of everything. So who is it that hates CNN? Republicans?
Yes.
Okay. And Democrats?
Hate Fox.
Hate Fox.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to say I put it on a news channel.
So we put it on... I was trying to think of something neutral.
Right. Yeah, and you can't think of it.
You put it on Spanish television.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Well, but at that time, it was like two people are dead and dozens injured. And right. So when I check it out Monday morning, I'm like, wait. What? The shooter was on the 32nd floor?
I know. It's insane.
I'm like, whoa. That, none of that was known an hour into the thing. You know, because I probably didn't go to bed till 2-ish that night.
What a nightmare, man.
Just an absolute nightmare. And our girl, KIV, Kelly in Vegas,
mm-hmm.
two career appearances on Games Galore Pod. She was there. I DM'd her on Twitter, and she was there the night before.
Ooh.
And you know, that guy had that room since like last Thursday. You wonder if he was like, maybe going
to
do it the night before and just, I don't know, didn't get,
Clearly he was insane. So, yeah,
utterly insane. But the thing that's crazy is apparently he has no criminal history other than like a parking ticket like 10 years ago.
I saw his dad,
His brother.
No, his dad was like a bank robber.
FBI 10 most wanted.
Yeah.
Right?
Crazy, man.
That was like the only link to any criminal activity, though.
I think it's just a guy who went nuts.
Went nuts. Just crazy. That's just such a tragedy. And yeah. I don't know if you know, Scott Laster, who lives here, he was out there. In fact, he was texting me about games on Saturday.
Really?
And, as I was watching Twitter, that night, he's tweeting that him and his girl just got run out of the New York, and they're taking cover somewhere, active shooters, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, wow,
that's
nuts. Nuts. And
let's go to the UFC to donate that.
Yeah. And so UFC fights this week. Let me check out the odds. Ferguson's going to crush Kevin Lee, I think.
Yeah.
You know what? I haven't seen Lee fight, but like twice now. He was impressive against, the guy he got in a fight with at the press conference. Why am I forgetting his name all of a sudden? I love the dude. And he wasn't out when No, it wasn't Mazzagatti. It was the other one who makes the stupid heart when they put the camera on him. Not Mario. Yakasama. Forget. Where are my UFC odds? Oh, here they are. Okay. So Black Beast is a big dog. I don't think he can beat Verdum. Although Verdum is definitely getting old. Black Beast is plus 200, man. And he blamed it on a back injury.
Right.
Oh, there was another, like, you just knew he wasn't retiring. He had just signed a new contract. He's like, yeah, this is my last fight, y'all. Changed his mind like 4 days later on his honeymoon.
Just kidding.
Oh, and speaking of that, another retirement you knew was fake was Rumble Johnson, and his agent or manager or whatever was on Helwani's MMA hour yesterday, and he said he's coming back, but at heavyweight, which Ooh. I like. I like that. Ooh. God, he's a, what is it, Rogan's quote? That is a terrifying human being, people. he is not bullshitting Rumble Johnson. I'm still so mad at him for the way he fought Cormier, though. Oh, you see there, Cormier, and this is crazy. I don't think it's official yet, but Gustafson's not going to get the title shot, which is such bullshit. It's going to be, they're giving it to the dude who, what's his name? Foreigner, old start. If you just get a like bloody elbow, it'll
right, say, I got you.
He had the big knockout win over Jimmy Manoa last time out. I think gotcha. I called him Manua on a show not too long ago, which is a horrible mistake. How we doing on time, Harbo?
We're getting close.
Okay,
we got another five if you want to wrap.
Yeah. Now let me get some NFL. So the Jagoffs, I faded them. Correctly, they can't stand prosperity. Got to get the Jets just on principle. How can you live with yourself if you don't bet the Jets as an underdog against the Browns this week, even though it's at the dog pound in Cleveland? What is Hugh Jackson since he got there, like 1-19? Yeah, they're 0-4 this year, right? 1-19. How in the hell are they favored? The Jets have already won two games. I know they might be the worst 2-2 team in NFL history. Oh, it's down to -1. Yeah, I need to go plug in the Jets right away when this show is over. The Thursday game, Patriots at the Bucks. Oh, the Bucks hosed me the other day. Let that lead get. Oh, they won by 2. The NFC South. Break up the NFC South. The Falcons let one get away. That was a bullshit non-reversal on what should have been an incomplete pass by Matt Ryan. Ended up being a scoop and score. There were a couple of crazy replay plays in that game. Two of them went against the Falcons. One went their way. New England in bounce back mode after they lose to Carolina. Carolina and the Falcons tied atop the NFC South. And the Bucks a half game back at 2-1. So get on the Jets this week. Get on Boise State. Not because you're like Boise State, because BYU is absolutely deplorable. Most disappointing team in the league. Look at my boy Ryan Ratting's Cowgirls. Just not very good this year. Just really not very good. Oh, KC Houston, that's the Sunday night. That's a great Sunday night game. Deshaun Watson, I haven't even looked at that box score yet, but they scored 50-something. He is balling. Why the hell O'Brien didn't have him in from the Tom Savage? Really? Come on, O'Brien. And, wow, Derek Carr is out. Oh, my God, EJ Manuel is starting. The Ravens are struggling so bad. But, my gosh, EJ Manuel, that's almost an automatic fade. Oh, but Baltimore's struggling so bad. So anyway, the Jags are catching 8.5. And I don't know that I'm going to go against the Jags this week. I had the Steelers for a winner. I went 5-3 in the NFL this past week. I went 3-3 in college, 2-3 Saturday, but I had Washington State Friday. And the New Mexico State could have easily been a winner. So could the Vandy have been. I had a couple of brutal beats. Anyway, we got to wrap up. Thanks to Tony Basilio. Great stuff on that. And, hey, best of luck. Bets and ball games this weekend. GG18 is in the books. We'll talk to you next week. Check out all my picks at BrianEdwardsSports.com. Follow me on Twitter at VegasBEdwards. Follow Tony Basilio at Tony Basilio. And we're over and out. Thanks for joining us.